Our voice in the wilderness this week comes from a very important voice indeed inside the Catholic Church, and the topic is child sex abuse. Pope Francis promises zero tolerance. He also has a vision for a more merciful church. At times, those two ambitions can conflict. Under this pope, bishops whose negligence has enabled pedophiles have gone unpunished. And in January, we learned a defrocked Italian pedophile priest was returned to the priesthood on condition he serve a lifetime of prayer and penance. This troubles Francis Sullivan. He's a lay Catholic, but he's the head of the Church's national response to the 1,200 Australian allegations of Catholic clerical sexual abuse. And he's this week's Voice in the Wilderness.
Voice in the Wilderness.
More than 1,200 priests and brothers have had an allegation of abuse made against them. The figures speak of a moral disease that is ingrained, almost cemented, within the culture of the church. There is now a deep malaise compounded by a simmering anger within the community about the church and child sexual abuse. At the very same time that the Catholic Church is being rotisserated by the Royal Commission, we have had the phenomenon of Pope Francis. Francis appeared on the scene in 2013, just before our first case study. So as the Royal Commission began to unwind the church edifice, the Holy Father likewise began to dismantle the institutional cultural bulwark that has strangled the life out of modern church. That said, it has been recently reported that the Pope is starting to go light on some priests who have been found to have abused children. The second very concerning development in Rome over the last couple of weeks has been the resignation of the last remaining publicly identified abuse survivor from the Pope's Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, Marie Collins. As she was leaving, she denounces the resistance and lack of cooperation by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and some Vatican officials. She reflected on whether the resistance to the commission is in fact resistance to the Pope himself. What seems very clear to me is that if people of goodwill, the good priests, the enlightened leaders, but more importantly, engaged and informed Catholics, don't continue to push for change and push hard, then as sure as night follows day, the reactionaries will overcome and nothing will change. Inertia will set in. Reformists will be shunned, and the victims of what has been the greatest betrayal in the Catholic Church in Australia will remain mired in hopelessness, despair, and anger. This is a very dangerous time for the Catholic Church in Australia. If the Church in Australia doesn't see continuous, concerted change from our leaders, driven and backed by an active and demanding Catholic community, then our church as a religion will become a marginalised rump. Any church leader who has ever pronounced apologies or actions or sentiments or commitments to putting victims and survivors first must be held to account by the Catholic community, because my observation is that the Royal Commission has viewed many of these statements with scepticism. We need a stringent policy of putting the right people with the right skills in the right places all the time. Diocesan and church organisations need to open the doors and the windows to genuine participation of the Catholic community in how their money is spent. Church leaders must demonstrate a move away from a church of privilege, of comfortable lifestyles, far removed from many of the faithful. What has shocked and confronted me the most about this sex abuse scandal is that it took place in a church. The very fact that the church is on trial rips at the heart of what the church is meant to be. And that speaks to me of a profound loss of direction, integrity, purpose, and meaning at the heart of the church. We must address this spiritual bankruptcy as much as anything else.
Francis Sullivan, who was appointed by the bishops to head the Catholic Church's Truth, Justice and Healing Council, which is overseeing the Catholic Church's response to clerical sexual abuse. Monica, very strong words from Francis Sullivan.
Absolutely.
He's a lay person. He's not a priest. He's not a bishop. He's not an archbishop. Do you think when he presents those positions to the church leadership, there's tension?
No, look, I don't think so. I think that from my observations, and I've done a fair bit of coverage of the Royal Commission, that Francis's voice seems to be very well received, not only by the public, but also within the church and by the leadership. I think when he talks about change, I would probably talk about conversion, that the church really needs to be in a continual process of conversion and returning to sort of the church of Christ and living up to our call.
Changing back, you mean?
Changing back to the true essence of Catholicism.
And when he talks about ordinary Catholic faithful forcing the church to change back or otherwise, are there vehicles for that to happen?
Well, the great difficulty with this sex abuse crisis is that a lot of Catholics have just disengaged, and the people of goodwill and the Catholic laity of goodwill, many of them feel so ashamed and so disgusted that they've just sort of walked away and thought, no, we can't make a change. Like, this is just too terrible. So I think part of our...
That's a horrible thing, isn't it?
It is a horrible thing. And I think that part of our job, and also part of, I hope, Francis's job too, is to not only sort of talk about the horrors of what has happened, but also to give confidence to Catholics and to give hope that they can throw their lot in with the church and actually work together with the leadership for change and for the good.
Christina, what's your message to all those Catholics, you know, the parishioners? How have their lives been changed for the worse?
First of all, they look around their parishes and don't see the same number of people who are there. They've lost faith community. And, you know, understand, for the Catholic Church, community is an important part of it. We are not, you know, people who talk about an individual personal relationship with Jesus Christ. We are talking about, we celebrate our faith, our sacraments are all done in community.
And the prime blame, of course, must be with the perpetrators and the protectors. But do you reserve some blame for media coverage, anti-Catholic sectarianism?
I think there's so much blame to go around here. I don't think you can sheet it home in one place or another. But I would say the lion's share of the blame resides in those people who sat in the hierarchy and made decisions to privilege the church's reputation over the safety of children.
And does that still happen today?
I suspect it does. And I think the big question that's going to come out of this Royal Commission is, how do Catholics in the pews participate in the leadership and the decision-making of their church? I don't think ordination's going to change. So how do we do that? How does that happen? And this is a big question for Francis's papacy more broadly. If I can go back to that teaching on the family that he put out last year, he talked a lot about conscience and the need for Catholic communities to make decisions in their own communities, how to welcome gay and lesbian people, how to deal with divorced people, how to deal with questions about contraception. So he put it out there that he's not here to replace consciences, he's there to form them, but he put no processes in place for Catholics to participate with their parish priest on those very decisions. And this is the same challenge. We are being asked, I've sat in a parish pew and listened to a bishop tell us that the Catholic Church belonged to all of us and this was a shame on all of us what had happened. It was up to all of us to fix it. And I was a bit in tears, but then I was seething with rage because there is no identifiable way for Catholics in the pews to participate in those decisions and discussions. And what will be fascinating about this Royal Commission is I am sure it will make recommendations about changes to governance in the Catholic Church and whether or not the Catholic Church says, thanks but no thanks, we got it from God and we're just going to keep on doing what we've been doing.
Did you see the equation as simple as that, Monica?
Obviously, there are things to learn from all of this experience and things for all of us to be learning. One of the big things that I found really interesting in the Royal Commission was listening to the evidence of Father Tom Doyle, who is sort of a greatly celebrated survivor advocate, talking about laicization or defrocking of priests. And what he was saying, look, it's a little bit difficult because if you laicize a priest, then the church has really no claim over them and the church has less ability to sort of make decisions about where they live or place restrictions on their life.
Sure, he may be maybe outside the fold. But you know it's just not been that. You know there have been bishops who've been promoted rather than defrocked.
Yes. Look, I think hopefully that is getting better. That will be a historical and not something of the past.
But it comes down to transparency. You know, the Catholic Church has to be more transparent. It has to have accountability. And, you know, and I know Francis Sullivan is pushing a number of these things. I know that there are changes that have been made. But do they go far enough? I would argue no. It'll be fascinating to see what this commission recommends and what the church's response is. I think that, James, is where we'll see a lot of the rubber hitting the road.
RN, it's God forbid, some light affair ahead. We're with Christina Keneally and Monica Dumit.